The saloon stretched the length of an entire block and had two entrances, one at the corner and one down the boardwalk in the middle of the block. The kids studied it from across the street. Business was good. Men went in and out the bat-winged entrance at the corner. The kid looked through the big plate glass front windows and saw a horseshoe-shaped bar in the center of the big room. To the right of the bar were tables where men sat and drank and flirted with the girls in short spangled dresses who worked there. To the left were poker tables, along with faro and keno layouts and a roulette wheel. Past the gambling tables was a staircase that led to the second floor. The girls probably earned some of their pay up there, too. The room was brightly lit by oil-burning chandeliers decorated with cut glass. Overall, Harrison's was a little bigger and a little fancier than a lot of frontier saloons, but it was still a saloon. The kid knew, even without stepping in there, what it would smell like. Whiskey, stale beer, tobacco smoke, cheap perfume, and hair pomade. To some men, that was the breath of life. Not to him. Being around that many people bothered him. He rode alone by choice, and for a good reason. He preferred the solitude of his grief. Life just didn't seem to understand that. It kept dragging him into one mess after another. He would never be free of the current mess until he brought Bloody Ben Bledsoe, or Matthew Harrison, as he was calling himself, to justice. The kid started across the street, pausing to let a group of vaqueros on their way to the saloon get there first and push through the bat wings ahead of him. He followed them in, knowing their wide-brimmed steeple-crown sombrero would shield him from immediate view. The kid's eyes quickly surveyed the room from one end to the other before anyone got a good look at him. Alonzo Craig and Dakota Pete stood at the bar drinking. Clyde Woods, the gambler, was sitting at one of the poker tables, playing with several other men. The kid didn't see J.P. Malone, and he didn't see anybody who looked the least bit like the face he saw, with or without a beard, looking out at him from the mirror when he shaved. Bledsoe might be back in the office, or he might be upstairs. The kid ambled over to the bar. Standing not far from Craig and Dakota Pete, he nodded to the bartender and ordered a beer. The apron drew it and slid the foaming mug across the hardwood.
That'll be four bits. For a beer? For the coldest, best beer you're gonna find this side of Tucson, friend. Anyway, that's a going rate, so take it or leave it.
I'll take it.
He picked up the beer and took a swallow of it. The bartender had overstated the case a little, but the beer wasn't bad. From the corner of his eye, the kid saw Dakota Pete nudge Craig. The sullen gunman leaned back so he could look past his big companion. After a moment, Craig picked up the bottle in front of him and splashed whiskey into a shot glass on the bar. He picked up the glass with his left hand and stepped away from the bar, turning toward the kid.
Hey, aren't you the hombre we saw a little while ago when we were coming out of the China Gal's whorehouse?
I think so.
You follow us up here, mister? You're looking for trouble?
No. The madam said they were closed temporarily. Something about having to haul out some corpses. So I figured it wouldn't do me any good to wait around there. I came up here looking for a drink instead.
Craig held out the glass.
Have one on me.
Thanks. I don't mind if I do.
The kid reached for the glass. Craig dropped it as his other hand flashed toward the gun on his hip. The kid expected it. He took a fast step forward and threw a hard left that smashed into Craig's jaw just as the man's gun started to clear leather. The powerful blow sent Craig stumbling backwards into Dakota Pete, who instinctively grabbed him to keep him from falling. That occupied Pete's hands long enough for the kid to palm out his Colt and level it at both of them.
Don't try reaching for your guns. If the bartender or anybody else behind me gets the bright idea of walloping me over the head, my thumb's coming off this hammer. At this range, there's a good chance a slug will go clean through both of you.
Let go of me, you big Scandinavian lummox.
Sorry, Alonzo. I was just trying to keep you from falling down.
Craig spread his feet a little, stiffened his back, and tugged his vest back into place as he glared at the kid.
What's the idea?
You tried to draw on me.
I was just seeing what you made of.
Well, now you know.
I wasn't gonna shoot.
Didn't have any way of knowing that.
All right.
Craig's gun had fallen to the sawdust-littered floor at his feet.
I'm gonna pick up my iron now.
Go ahead. Might be a good idea to do it careful-like, though.
Craig bent and retrieved the revolver. He slid it into leather.
You can lower that hammer now, cowboy. You're making me a mite nervous. Your thumb could slip.
It never has yet.
The kid carefully let the hammer down, lowering the gun until he held it at his side, but he didn't holster it.
What's your name?
They call me Kid Morgan.
I think I've heard of him, Lonzo. He's supposed to be pretty fast.
I'd say we saw that with our own eyes, Pete. I'm Alonzo Craig. This is Dakota Pete.
I'd be willing to bet you have quite a few friends in here, Craig. If any of them decide to make a try for me, they might get me, but I'll get you first. If I'm going to hell, you're going to be there to welcome me.
Don't be so damn touchy. I told you I wasn't going to shoot you. Nobody's going to bother you, Morgan. Now, how about I buy you a drink? For real this time.
All right. You won't mind if I don't holster this shooting iron just yet.
Suit yourself.
Craig motioned for the bartender to bring him a fresh beer. He poured drinks for himself, Pete, and the kid, who picked up his glass with his left hand.
You sure are a distrustful cuss.
It's how I've lived this long.
The three men drank. Around them, the atmosphere in the saloon slowly got back to normal after the tension that had gripped the room when it appeared guns might start to roar at any second.
What brings you to Gehenna?
Same things that have taken me everywhere else I've been. A horse and the need to earn some money.
I hear some of the mines across the border in Mexico are hiring.
I'm not a miner.
No, I can see that.
You know of anything else a man could do around here to earn some wages?
Who's your new friend, Alonzo?
The kid turned toward the new voice, moving smoothly and unhurriedly as if he didn't have a care in the world. He found himself looking straight into the face of the man he had come so far to find. Bloody Ben Bledsoe. It wasn't exactly like looking into a mirror. There were some significant differences. Bledsoe's eyes were set slightly closer together. His nose was a little broader. His jaw slightly more angular, although it was hard to be sure about that because of the close-cropped sandy beard. With the two of them standing together, no one except maybe Blind Viejo would have any trouble telling them apart. If a person was only looking at one of them, however, it was understandable one might be mistaken for the other, the kid thought.
He says his name's Kid Morgan, boss.
I'm Matthew Harrison. This is my place.
He gestured toward the glass in the kid's hand.
Your first drink?
Tonight.
It's on the house, then.
Bledsoe looked at the bartender, and the man nodded in understanding.
What brings you to Gehenna, Mr. Morgan?
We were just talking about that, boss. Morgan's looking for work.
Is that so? What occupation do you follow?
I don't have what you'd call an occupation. I pick up work here and there.
I see. And you're looking to pick up work here in Gehenna?
If there's any to be had.
Well, you see, that may be a slight problem. Men who do your sort of work are employed by me. Or not at all.
You've got a monopoly on trouble?
Well, you could say that. No offense, Mr. Morgan, but how does a drifting gunman know about such things as monopolies?
I read a newspaper every now and then.
That's good. I believe people should be better informed about this world we live in.
Bledsoe made a curt gesture, and a second later the bartender handed him a glass that he'd filled from a bottle he took from underneath the hardwood. Brandy, the kid guessed. Bledsoe drank from the glass and licked his lips appreciatively.
So, do you want to work for me?
If you have something that needs doing, sure.
That's the problem. I already have Alonzo and Pete here working for me, along with several other equally talented men. They've done such a good job bringing the town in line with my wishes, there's really nothing left to do.
In that case, I reckon I'll ride on in a day or two.
Maybe something will come up between now and then. You never know.
Thanks for the drink.
You're welcome. See you around.
He moved away from the bar, walking through the big room, stopping here and there to speak to someone. The men he talked to looked nervous, as if they wanted to curry favor with him, but were afraid of him at the same time.
If I was you, Morgan, I'd give some thought to riding on out of town tonight, instead of hanging around for a few days.
Oh? Why is that?
Because like Mr. Harrison said, he's got plenty of help already. There's no reason for a man like you to hang around.
Having a little competition around worries you, does it, Craig?
Not hardly. Anyway, I wouldn't call it competition. You took me by surprise.
Because I didn't fall for your little trick?
Come on, Pete. I'm getting bored.
Where are we going, Lonzo?
I don't know, Plastic. Somewhere else.
Sure. Whatever you say.
Craig and his companion went over to a table and sat down, leaving the kid standing alone at the bar. The apron ambled up and nodded toward the kid's empty glass.
You want a refill on that or another beer?
No, thanks. I think I'm done for the evening.
The bartender leaned in close.
I heard what Craig told you. Now, don't you worry about looking like he's got you buffaloed, mister.
You'd be smart to get on out of town tonight, like he said. Men who don't pay attention to Craig, well, they wind up dead most times. And sometimes they weren't looking at what killed them, if you get my drift.
So, he's a back shooter.
No, I didn't say that. No, sir, I never did.
I'm obliged for the advice. My horse is tired and needs to rest. I'll be around.
Suit yourself.
Bartender moved off, wiping circles on the hardwood with a damp rag. The man had probably worked for the saloon's previous owner, George Hopkins, the kid mused. The owner who had mysteriously gone missing just as Matthew Harrison had arrived in Gehenna and promptly taken over. The kid had no doubt the man was either buried somewhere in the desert, or else he'd been dumped so the buzzards picked his flesh and coyotes scattered the bare bones. The bartender and the others who had worked for Hopkins probably had no love lost for their current employer, but they were too afraid of Bledsoe and his gunman to rock the boat. The kid finished the beer he'd been drinking earlier, then left the saloon. As he walked out, he was conscious of eyes following him, knew they belonged to Alonzo Craig. Craig wouldn't let things rest. The kid had humiliated him in front of everybody in the saloon. Enough people had seen it so the story would be all over town by morning. How the stranger who had ridden into Gehenna had laid out Craig with one punch, beating him to the draw with his fist. Despite Craig's pose of friendliness following that incident, the thing would eat at him, nibbling away at his soul and his pride. The only way to stop the torment would be for the kid to die. Out in public, where everybody could see would be best. But Craig would probably be willing to settle for an ambush, as long as the kid wound up dead. The kid turned toward Rosarita's place, where he'd left his horse. He walked slowly along the street, giving Craig plenty of time to come after him if that's what the gunman wanted. It was a dangerous game he was playing. Craig was fast. The kid had seen that with his own eyes. He had been only a hair faster than Craig. The next time, it might be Craig who shaved off that whisker of a heartbeat first. He sensed it was his chance to penetrate Bledsoe's inner circle. What he would do when and if he got there, he didn't know. But the more Bledsoe trusted him, the easier it would be to capture the man and take him back to face justice. It was a gamble worth taking. The kid wished he had eyes in the back of his head so he could see if Craig left the saloon and followed him. He glanced back from time to time, trying not to be too obvious about it. The third time he looked back, he saw a big figure lumbering after him.
Hey, kid, wait up.
The kid stopped and turned, frowning slightly. He hadn't expected Dakota Pete to come after him alone. Maybe Craig had sent the big man to deliver an invitation to a showdown. As the kid came around, he saw that he had stopped in front of the pitch-dark mouth of a narrow alley between a hardware store and a saddle shop. For a split second, he faced the alley mouth. Instinct twisted him aside so the bullet whispered past him, close enough to tug at his sleeve. He whipped up his gun in the same heartbeat, and before the man in the shadows could fire again, the kid leveled it. The kid backed away swiftly, continuing to turn so he could cover both the alley mouth and Dakota Pete. The Viking gunman had thrust his hands in the air and made no move toward the revolver on his hip.
Don't shoot! I ain't slapping leather, kid.
Alonzo Craig stumbled out of the alley. The street was faintly lit, but bright enough for the kid to recognize the man's clothing. His body had jerked so violently as both of the kid's slugs hammered into his chest, his hat had come off. He still had his gun in his hand and tried to lift it as he weaved forward a few stumbling steps.
You son of a bitch. You killed me.
Drop the gun, Craig.
Craig ignored him. The gunman summoned up the last of his strength to lift the Colt again. Stop! The kid shot him in the center of the forehead and the bullet slammed him backward. His gun flew from his hand and he landed with his arms and legs outflung in death. Knowing that Craig was no longer a threat, the kid turned toward Dakota Pete again. The big man still had his hands up.
I ought to kill you too for helping him try to bushwhack me.
I didn't know what Lonzo was planning, kid. You gotta believe me. He just told me to wait a minute and then come after you and tell you he wanted to talk to you.
And it was just a coincidence that you'd called out to me as I was passing this alley. So I'd turn around and he'd have a chance to shoot me from the front and make it look like he downed me in a gunfight.
I didn't know nothing about that.
The kid didn't believe him, but it wasn't worth arguing about. He'd be careful not to turn his back on Dakota Pete in the future. The street was starting to fill with people as the citizens of Gehenna came out to see what all the shooting was about. Quickly, the kid replaced the three rounds he had fired in case he needed a full wheel again. He spotted Bledsoe coming down the street toward him, followed closely by the other two gun hawks, Malone and Woods. Now they would see how the hand played out, the kid thought, as he slid his gun back into leather. Bledsoe stopped a few yards away and glanced at Pete.
Put your hands down, for God's sake.
He turned his attention to Craig, staring at the gunman's body for a second before he shook his head and looked at the kid.
If it's a fair fight, Craig got off the first shot.
That's true, boss.
When I want to hear from you, I'll ask you a question, Pete. I was afraid of this when I heard about how you got the best of Craig. He wasn't the sort of man to forget about something like that. Of course, if he had been, I probably wouldn't have wanted him to work for me.
Probably not.
The interesting thing is that with Craig gone, I need to hire somebody else. Are you interested in the job, Morgan?
Like I told you before, I'm always looking to pick up a little work.
Come back to the saloon. We'll talk about it.
I was on my way to get my horse.
Go ahead. You can take it to the livery stable in the next block. There won't be any charge for taking care of the animal. The owner and I have an arrangement. Then come to the saloon. There's an empty room upstairs you can use. Dakota, why don't you go with Mr. Morgan and make sure he finds the livery all right?
Sure, boss.
All right. Everyone break it up and move on. The trouble's over.
In a way, it was true that Bledsoe was the law there, just as Warden Jonas Fletcher had been the law at Hellgate Prison. Gehenna was like everywhere else. The rule of law meant something only when it was backed up by force, or the threat of it. The kid started toward Rosarita's again, accompanied by Dakota Pete.
I was telling the truth before, kid. I didn't know Lonzo was going to bushwhack you.
You never pulled a stunt like that before?
Not with me helping him, he didn't. I don't know about anything Clyde or JP might have done. Them and Lonzo was pretty close. They rode together before, on other jobs.
But not you?
Nope. Never met any of them before we all come to Gehenna.
How did all of you wind up here? What made you come?
I heard that a fellow was putting together a bunch to come down here and take over. I was up in Prescott, working on a deal there involving the railroad. It didn't turn out like it was supposed to, so I had to light a shuck out of there in a hurry. Things got a mite hot for me, if you know what I mean. When I made it to Tucson, I heard about Mr. Harrison's job and went in to see him. He already had Lonzo and several others working for him. We hit it off, so I threw in with him.
As they came to Rosarita's, Pete looked at the whorehouse.
I reckon we ain't wanted in there no more.
Well, the place is closed down right now anyway. What happened in there earlier?
No, I was just stupid. Those fellas were from some of those mule trains that come through here loaded with coal. They picked out some girls, but Lonzo and JP decided they wanted the same girls and didn't want to wait for them. So Lonzo said they was going first, and those other fellas took exception to that, and before you know it, there's guns going off. Nothing all that unusual. The China gal who runs the place would be mad at us for getting blood on the rugs, I reckon. The boss says we got to go along with what she says. I'll tell him I said so, but I think the boss has got a sweet spot for that China gal. She pays him part of her profits like most everybody else in town, but I think he'd rather spark her than collect from her.
That was an interesting bit of information, the kid thought as he filed it away in his brain. He didn't know if it would prove to be useful, but the more he knew about his enemies, the better. He untied his horse and led it back up the street. Pete pointed out the livery stable Bledsoe had mentioned. The proprietor, who emerged from his office and living quarters attached to the barn, fuzzy-headed and bleary-eyed from sleep, woke up fast when he saw Dakota Pete. He also agreed to take good care of the kid's horse without hesitation.
He means it, too.
Pete and the kid started back toward the saloon.
My horse is in there, and the fella does a fine job taking care of it. The other boys' horses are there, too.
Craig's body was gone when they went past the spot where the gunman had died. The undertaker was having a busy night. Activity in the saloon had returned to normal. Bledsoe was sitting at a large round table in the rear with Malone and Woods. He motioned for the kid and Pete to come over and join them. As the kid approached, he kept a wary eye on the two gunhawks. According to Pete, they'd been trail partners with Craig in the past. They might be inclined to try to settle the score for him. Bledsoe smiled. Malone and Woods didn't exactly follow his lead, but they didn't glare murderously at the kid. Their faces were carefully neutral.
Did you get your horse settled in over at the livery?
Yeah, much obliged.
That's nothing. Always happy to help out one of my men.
I haven't said I'd work for it.
No, but you need a job, and I need a man with certain skills. Skills which you've amply demonstrated tonight. Drink.
I'd rather not let whiskey muddle my brain if we're going to be talking business.
I'll take a drink, boss. It don't matter if my brain's a little muddled.
Help yourself, Pete. I've been talking to Clyde and JP here about you joining us, Morgan. They're not opposed to the idea.
I'm glad to hear that. I was worrying about that very thing.
I like for my men to get along. We have enough enemies around here without fighting each other.
You seem to be Gehenna's leading citizen. I wouldn't think you'd have any enemies.
You know better than that, Morgan. No man is given power, he has to seize it. And you can't seize power without taking it away from someone else. That makes enemies.
I suppose you're right.
Right now, the people around here are like cattle at the start of a drive. It's not hard to prod and poke them into the direction you want them to go. They don't want to suffer any. They don't even want to be inconvenienced. But just like a cattle drive, the longer things go on, the harder they're going to be to control. They're going to ask themselves why they're plodding along peacefully to the slaughterhouse. Now, when that starts to happen, some of them will try to stampede, and that's when we show them who's really in charge, whatever it takes. What do you say, Morgan? You want to sign on and help us keep things in line? The job pays $100 a month, but in the long run, there'll be an opportunity for all of us to make a lot more than that.
No hard feelings about what happened to Craig?
Craig made his own choice. And my men only have hard feelings if and when I say they do. I'm willing to move on.
In that case, I say the job's too good to pass up. You've got a deal, Mr. Harrison.
Fine. You won't regret this, Morgan.
I'm sure I won't.
Even after he had agreed to work for Bledsoe and settled the evening's business, the kid didn't drink much, only one more beer. He pled weariness, which wasn't actually a lie, and said that if it was all right and his new boss didn't need him for anything, he was ready to turn in.
Sure. You want one of the girls to go upstairs with you?
Maybe another time. Tonight, I'm just interested in sleep.
Whatever you want. Some men like to be with a woman after a killing.
Not me.
Well, anytime you want one of them, just say the word. Men who work for me don't have to pay. The same is true down at Rosarita's.
Like a delivery stable?
Something like that, yes. The fact of the matter is, your money's not good for anything in this town from here on out, Morgan. Which means your wages are profit, free and clear.
That's a good arrangement.
My men seem to think so. Pete, take Morgan upstairs and show him the empty room at the end of the hall. He can bunk there.
Sure, boss.
One more thing. Make sure somebody else knows where you are at all times. If there's trouble any time of the night or day, I don't want to have to run around trying to find you. You're always on the job. Understand?
Sure. For the next 7 or 8 hours, I'll be in that room upstairs.
Good. Remember that.
The kid and Pete started up the stairs.
This isn't Craig's room I'm taking, is it?
Nah. Somebody'll have to clean Lonzo's gear out of his room. Probably JP. They was closer friends than Lonzo and Clyde.
I wouldn't want to take the room of a man I'd just killed.
Well, that's just plumb thoughtful of you, kid.
Pete took him to a small room at the end of the second floor hallway. An iron bedstead with a bare straw-tick mattress on it filled up most of the floor space, leaving only enough room for a tiny table with an oil lamp on it and a single chair. A folded sheet and blanket were on the bed. The kid picked up the bedding and saw a brown stain on the mattress.
What happened to the fellow who used to have this room?
Well, he got one of the gals who works here mad at him because of something he said or did. I don't know exactly what. She snuck out of here one night whilst he was sleeping and stuck him with a knife. Well, that woke him up, of course, so he grabbed his gun and shot her before he fell back into bed and died. She made it back out into the hall and died there. Real shame. She was pretty.
What about the man?
Oh, I didn't know him too well. It was just a few days after we'd all come into Gehenna. I reckon he was all right, but I ain't shed no tears over him.
After saying goodnight to Pete, the kid put the sheet and blanket on the bed. It wouldn't be the first time he'd slept in a place where blood had been spilled. He propped the chair under the doorknob, then unbuckled his gun belt and hung it over one of the bedposts so the butt of his revolver stuck up from the holster within easy reach. After stripping down to the bottom half of a pair of long underwear, he blew out the lamp and stretched out on top of the bedding. After a few moments of lying there, staring up at the darkened ceiling, the kid sat up and swung his legs out of bed. He stood up, went to the window, and pushed the curtain aside so he could look out into the night. There was no balcony outside the window, no easy way to reach it from the ground. He had forgotten to check earlier, and he chided himself for overlooking it. The logical part of his brain said that a man simply couldn't be vigilant every waking moment. It wasn't possible. But a man who lived by the gun had to be. Like a wild animal, when he slept, he had to den up in a place where no predators could get to him. In Gehenna, the predators were all two-legged, starting with Bloody Ben Bledsoe. The window faced east. Somewhere out in the vast Arizona darkness he was looking at, Carl Drake and Gillian Fletcher waited for him. He hoped they were all right, and that Drake could be trusted with the beautiful young woman. He wished he could have gotten back to the camp. Drake had been locked up in Hellgate Prison, too. He might decide to get back at Jonas Fletcher by taking out his hatred on the warden's daughter. If that happened, sooner or later, the kid would kill Drake. Simple as that. When the kid rode into Gehenna, he hadn't been expected to be working a few hours later for the very man he had come to find. Fate had taken a hand in the game very quickly, and the kid knew he couldn't afford to pass up the chance that had been given to him. He would feel better about things, though, when he could see with his own eyes that Jillian was still all right. He let the curtain fall closed and went back to lie down on the bed. It was quite a while before he went to sleep. When the kid went downstairs the next morning, he found Bledsoe and the man's inner circle of gun wolves sitting at the same table where they'd been the night before. But they were eating breakfast instead of drinking. Bledsoe waved him over.
Join us, Morgan.
He motioned to the bartender, who evidently was serving as the waiter. The man brought a cup of coffee to the kid.
Are you ready to get to work this morning?
Sure. What's the job?
The fellow who runs the blacksmith shop has gotten reluctant to pay the share of profits he owes me. He says he can't afford it. I'm going to send Dakota here to remind him that he can't afford not to pay up. I'd like to have two men handling these little jobs just in case.
I won't have no trouble with him, boss.
I know that, but I still want to send Morgan with you.
Sure. Whatever you say, Mr. Harrison.
That's right. Whatever I say goes.
The ham, eggs, and hash brown potatoes the bartender brought to the kid were surprisingly good.
He must have a real kitchen back there. Somebody who knows his way around it.
No, there's a cafe in the next block that supplies all our meals. You can stop in there anytime you want.
And eat for no charge?
Exactly. You're getting the idea, Morgan.
The kid had the idea, all right. Bledsoe, in his false identity as saloon owner Matthew Harrison, was really running Gehenna like a tin-plated little dictator. He ruled the settlement with an iron fist and hired guns. While the kid was eating, he noticed from time to time Clyde Woods glanced at J.P. Malone. The kid knew he couldn't afford to trust the two men. They'd been closer to Alonzo Cragg than anyone else in town, and he had a hunch sooner or later they'd try to avenge their friend. They'd be careful about it, though. They wouldn't want to get on their employer's bad side. After all, Bledsoe had hired the kid and promised him there were no hard feelings. If they could work things out so some sort of fatal accident happened to him, the kid didn't doubt for a second that Woods and Malone would do such a thing.
All right. Two of you can go see that blacksmith now. Don't come back until things are settled with him.
You bet, boss.
Pete pushed his chair back and stood up. The kid did likewise, knowing it was a test of sorts. He wanted to make good on it, wanted Bledsoe to trust him. He could feel Woods and Malone still watching him as he and Pete left the saloon.
The blacksmith shop's down yonder. The fellow's name is Bonham. Pretty big. Not as big as me, though.
As they approached the squat, open-fronted blacksmith shop, the kid heard a hammer ringing against an anvil. It was a familiar sound, comforting in a way because it smacked of normalcy, something that was probably in short supply those days in Gehenna. The sound stopped short as they came up to the building. A red glow came from the open door of the forge and heat washed from it. The man who stood behind the anvil holding a short-handled sledgehammer wasn't wearing a shirt, although a thick leather apron covered his bare chest. Thick black hair curled out from under the apron. His head was covered with a thatch of that same sort of hair, and a beard jutted from his jaw. He was a little shorter than Dakota Pete, but his shoulders were just as broad and bulged with muscle in the same way.
Hey, Bonham! Mr. Harrison sent us to have a talk with you.
The blacksmith raised the hammer and rushed toward Pete with the tool held high, poised to descend with bone-crushing force. Pete reacted quickly to the danger. He twisted to the side with surprising agility for such a big man, ducking out of the way as the hammer came down. The blow missed him and left Bonham off balance. The next second, Pete tackled the blacksmith. He drove Bonham backward and lifted him off his feet in an amazing display of strength. Both men crashed to the ground in front of the anvil. Bonham swung the hammer at Pete again. Pete jerked his left hand up and grabbed the blacksmith's wrist in time to keep the blow from landing. The long, corded muscles in his arm bunched like steel cables under the buckskin shirt as he strained to keep Bonham from braining him. At the same time, Pete's right hand darted at Bonham's throat and closed around it. The fingers dug into the flesh under the thick black beard. Bonham's eyes widened grotesquely, and he used his free hand to gouge at Pete's eyes. Pete twisted his head away from the clawing fingers, causing his grip on Bonham's wrist to slip. A hammer hit Pete's shoulder. Bonham heaved up from the ground, arching his back as he toppled Pete off it. The two men rolled over and over as they wrestled each other. A small cloud of dust rose around them. Finally, Pete failed to block one of Bonham's huge, knobby fists. It crashed into his jaw and sent him sprawling on his back, stunned. Bonham heaved himself upright and started to swing around slowly toward the kid. The kid drew his gun, stepped up, and slammed the Colt into the side of the blacksmith's head as hard as he could. Bonham's eyes rolled up in their sockets. He landed face down in the dirt and didn't move. The kid glanced toward the street and saw a very hostile crowd. He didn't care. He wasn't in Gehenna to win friends. He wanted to take Bledsoe back to Hellgate and clear his own name. Any good that did the citizens of Gehenna was just coincidental, he told himself.
Break it up. Go on about your business.
The townspeople did so, reluctantly walking away from the blacksmith shop, but not without glaring some more at the kid first. He went to where Dakota Pete had fallen and knelt at the side of the big Viking gunman. Pete's eyelids were fluttering. He moved his arms and legs around a little as awareness came back to him. The kid put a hand on his shoulder.
Pete. Pete, can you hear me?
Oh, Lord. What the hell happened?
Bonham knocked you out for a minute. That's what happened.
Oh, hell. I can't believe I let that big bastard whip me.
Well, don't worry. It was a pretty even fight most of the way.
Pete leaned to the side and looked past the kid at the blacksmith's senseless form stretched on the ground.
What happened to him? Who knocked him out? Surely it wasn't
me. Well, hell yeah, it was.
He hefted the heavy Colt revolver.
But I had a little help.
Oh, I get it now. You pistol whipped him.
Yeah, I'm not proud of it. But I thought that would be better than breaking every bone in my hands and probably getting my head handed to me as well.
Still holding the gun, the kid straightened and turned toward Bonham. The blacksmith had begun to stir. It was amazing that anybody could have taken as much punishment as he had and not be unconscious for hours.
If you can get up, help me turn him over.
Pete climbed heavily to his feet. He was still a little unsteady, but was able to reach down and take hold of Bonham's shoulder. They rolled the massive blacksmith onto his back. The kid knelt and put the barrel of his gun under Bonham's beard, bearing down enough to dig the muzzle into the man's throat. After a moment, Bonham forced his eyes open. He seemed to understand what the cold ring of metal prodding his neck was.
That's right. All I have to do to blow a chunk of your head off is pull the trigger. So you better not move, Bonham.
What do you want?
You know why we're here, otherwise you wouldn't have jumped us. You've been given trouble about living up to your responsibilities.
I don't have any responsibilities to that snake Harrison.
That's where you're wrong. Things are different now in Gehenna. You want to do business here, there's a price. You can pay it, or get out.
Or die.
Bonham here is too smart for that. He knows the part of something is better than all of nothing. A dead man can't make any money. So why don't you show up down at the saloon with what you owe by, say, sundown tomorrow? That gives you a little time.
Go to hell.
The kid pressed harder with the gun barrel.
You think it over. You just think about it.
Then he pulled the Colt away and stood up with the lithe motion of a snake uncoiling.
Come on, Pete. I think you got the message.
The kid and Dakota Pete backed away from the blacksmith. Bonham sat up and glowered at them as he lifted a big hand to massage his sore neck. Bruises were already starting to form on his face where Pete's fists had battered him. The same sort of bruises were beginning to be visible on Pete's face. The kid didn't holster his gun until he and his companion had turned toward the saloon. As they walked along the street, he was aware of people staring at them.
Can't believe he beat me. Nobody beats me.
Happens to the best of us. Craig was fast, but I was faster. There are men out there faster on the draw than I am.
That's a little hard to believe.
Believe it. There's always somebody faster, bigger, stronger. It's just the way life is.
Maybe so, but I don't have to like it. I sure hope the boss don't hear about what happened.
Well, he probably will. A lot of people saw the fight. Word'll get back to him.
Then you'll look good, and I'll just be a loser.
Don't worry. If Harrison asks me about it, I'll tell him I never would have been able to handle Bonham if you hadn't taken him down a notch first.
You'd do that, kid?
Sure.
That's mighty nice of you. I got a hunch when the boss hears about this, he's gonna make you his segundo, just like Lonzo was. That's liable to make JP and Clyde even more mad at you for killing him.
I had already thought about that. I'm going to need eyes in the back of my head as long as I'm around here.
Don't worry, kid. You got me for that.
As the kid had predicted, Bledsoe had already heard about the fight at the blacksmith shop by the time he and Pete got back to the saloon.
That's why I wanted two people to handle that chore.
Bledsoe stood at the bar and talked to the kid and Pete. Malone and Woods weren't around, as far as the kid could tell.
He got in some lucky punches, boss.
Quite a few lucky punches from what I heard. But don't worry about it, Dakota. From the sound of it, you and Morgan here make a good team. Why don't you stick together?
That sounds mighty good to me.
Sure.
The kid wasn't too happy about the partnership, despite the smile he put on his face. Bledsoe's insistence on always knowing where his men were was already making it difficult for the kid to get out of town and rendezvous with Drake and Jillian. He needed to talk to them if they were going to figure out how to grab Bledsoe and get him out of Gehenna and back to Hellgate. There was nothing he could do about it at the moment, although an idea had begun to play around in the back of his head.
Anything else we can do for you now, boss?
No. I'll let you know if I need you for anything. Until then, just hang around here at the saloon or down at the cafe.
At midday, he and Pete walked down to the cafe, which was run by a middle-aged couple who gave them frightened, resentful glances from time to time while they were eating. The kid wanted to pay for the meals when he and Pete left, but he knew that the sort of man he was pretending to be wouldn't do that. A callous, mercenary gunman would be only too happy to take advantage of the chance for free meals. Later on, if there was a chance, he would see to it that the couple got paid something for all the food they'd had to dish out to Bledsoe's hired killers. The kid vowed to make things right with Bonham the blacksmith, too. They strolled back toward the saloon.
Have you ever paid a visit to Rosarita's, Pete?
You mean the whorehouse run by the Chinese gal with the Mex name? You know I've been there, kid. You saw me there last night.
Yeah, that's right. What about the girls? Are they any good?
Sure. They're soiled doves, about like what you find anywhere else, I reckon.
I was thinking I might go down there this evening.
Mr. Harrison said you and me was supposed to stay together.
Well, hell, Pete, you could come along too, couldn't you?
Yeah. I don't see why not.
Not in the same room, though. Man needs privacy for some things.
Oh, yeah, sure. Both of us being there in the whorehouse at the same time, that's close enough to staying together.
That's what I thought.
The day was a long one, its monotony broken only by the appearance of Bonham at the saloon late that afternoon. The blacksmith had taken off his apron and put on a shirt, but otherwise he looked the same. He turned his bruised face from side to side, scowling as his gaze touched the kid and Pete where they sat at one of the tables. Then Bonham marched up to the bar and plopped down a canvas poke on the hardwood.
Where's Harrison?
Mr. Harrison is back in the office. You want me to fetch him, Theo?
I damn sure do.
Hang on.
A moment later, the bartender came back with Bledsoe. Bonham gave the poke a shove that sent it sliding down the bar toward him. It came to a stop in front of Bledsoe.
Here's your blood money, Harrison.
You should show some respect, Bonham. I'm just trying to make this town a better place.
Better for you, you mean. Anyway, here's the money.
I'll expect the same amount next week, plus 20 more dollars.
Hell, I don't think I made $20 over and above what's in that poke all week.
That's not my problem. I guess you'll just have to work harder.
There ain't any more horses and mules in these parts that need to be shod.
Again, you'll have to worry about that, not me.
Bonham looked like he wanted to bound across the floor, grab Bledsoe by the neck, and squeeze the life out of him. The kid was ready to stand up and stop Bonham from doing that if the blacksmith tried it, and so was Pete. In fact, he looked eager to have an excuse to have another scrap with the blacksmith. But then Bonham's broad shoulders sagged in defeat.
All right. You'll get your money.
I thought so.
When the man was gone, Bledsoe came over to the table and sat down at one of the empty chairs.
These people just don't understand. They're like sheep or cattle. They were put here to benefit their superiors. You understand, don't you, Morgan? You strike me as a man who's had some education.
I just go along to try to get along, boss.
Go get us some beers, Dakota. Take your time about it.
Sure, boss.
Pete lumbered to his feet and went to the bar.
I sense a kindred spirit in you, Morgan. You might not know it to look at me, but I'm an educated man. In fact, I once taught law at a famous university back east.
I don't doubt it.
You don't, eh? Well, what would you say if I told you that I grew up in these parts? I spent a lot of time in this jerkwater town when I was a young man. What's really sweet about this is none of these bastards even remember me. Of course, I had a different name then. I didn't have the beard. Nobody gave a damn about me. I was just some starving kid. But I left and made something of myself, no matter what they thought of me.
Sometimes, when a fellow has it too easy, it's not good for him.
Exactly. I knew what it was like to be poor, and that helped me to get rich.
Teaching at some university?
No, getting rich came later. I thought I'd be satisfied just making a life for myself where people respected me. I found out that people don't really respect a man because of how smart he is or how much education he has. There are only two things people respect: money and power.
What about a gun?
Oh, it's not the gun they respect. It's the power of life and death behind it.
You may be right, boss.
I know I'm right. I proved it by coming back here and using a different name as I seized power. I'll let you in on my plan, Morgan. I'm going to bleed this town dry. This town and everybody in it. And then, when there's nothing else I can take from them, I'll tell them that it wasn't Matthew Harrison who ruined them. No, sir. It was Ben Bledsoe. Ben Bledsoe, the son of that old rumpot Silas Bledsoe, the town drunk. Town joke. If I stayed here, I would have inherited that position from him. And that's why I had to get out.
That's quite a story, boss. I'm thinking you don't want me telling anybody about it.
That's right. If you tell anybody, I'll kill you myself, Morgan. I'll make sure you take a long, hard time dying, too.
You don't have a thing to worry about. This is a good setup. I don't want to ruin it.
You keep your mouth shut, then. I'm not sure why I told you all that anyway. I'm just tired of being surrounded by people who have never been anywhere and never done anything worth mentioning. Like I said, you strike me as a man with some education. But if you don't want to talk about it, that's all right.
Maybe someday.
Sure. Whatever you want.
Pete came back over with the beers then.
Looked like you fellas was having quite a talk. What'd I miss?
Nothing much. I was just telling the boss that you and I plan to go down to Rosarita's tonight.
Yeah. Is that all right with you, boss?
Of course. Have a good time. I'll know where to find you if I need you.
After supper at the cafe, the kid and Pete headed down the street toward Rosarita's. The sun had set almost an hour earlier, and stars had come out in a sable panoply of the sky overhead. Something was nagging at the kid's brain.
You know where Malone and Woods are?
Nope. Could be they're off doing something for the boss, or they could just be holed up somewhere drinking. JP's got a real fondness for that who hit John. He goes on a bender now and then.
The kid nodded. Pete's explanation was certainly reasonable, but he would have felt better knowing exactly where Malone and Woods were. The blind man wasn't on the porch, but Rosarita's was open for business again. When the two men went into the parlor, the kid saw that the blood had been scrubbed up off the floor. He could still see the ragged crimson stains in his mind's eye, along with the bullet-riddled bodies from which the blood had leaked.
Did you do any of that shooting in here last night?
Nah. I can handle the gun work when I have to, but I ain't all that fond of it. That was the other fellas doing.
The kid nodded, for some reason glad to know that Pete hadn't participated in the massacre. The big Viking was an outlaw and a hired killer, but the kid felt a certain degree of liking for him anyway. He didn't seem quite as cold-blooded as the others. Several young Mexican women lounged around the parlor in various stages of undress. They smiled in welcome at the two men. A couple got up from a brocaded divan and came over to greet the kid and Pete.
You wish to be entertained this evening, senores?
That's right, little darling. You reckon you're up for the chore?
You're the one who will have to be up for it, muchacho.
Oh, I am. You damn well betcha I am.
Before we go upstairs, I need to talk to Rosarita for a minute.
She don't go with the customers, senor. But I'll be plenty of woman for you. You'll see.
I still want to talk to her.
Brady!
The fat bouncer came out of another room.
Don't I know you?
I was here for a little while last night. I went upstairs and talked with Rosarita.
Oh, yeah, I remember now. You come back to sample our girls?
Yeah, in a minute. As soon as I talk to Rosarita.
How come, kid? Is there a problem?
No, no problem. We just hit it off last night, and I want to say hello to her.
I can wait.
No, I'll be too worn out afterward. I think this pretty little señorita is going to take all of my strength to handle.
Oh, see, you are right about that, señor.
Yeah, fine. Come on upstairs.
What about me and this gal? You reckon we can go ahead and get started?
Sure. Have a good time. Don't expect to see me for a while, though. I've got lots of ideas I want to try out, so I reckon I'll be up there for a while. You can just wait for me down here if you get through first, Pete. I reckon the company will be pretty good.
You're damn right. Come on, honey.
As they all started up to the second floor, the woman with the kid leaned her head on his shoulder.
There are some things I don't do, mister. There must be. But I ain't found them yet.
While Pete and his companion for the evening went off into one of the rooms, Brady knocked on the door of Rosarita's bedchamber and office.
Fella out here wants to see you, ma'am.
The door opened a moment later. Rosarita looked out with a frown on her attractive face.
You again.
I just need a minute of your time.
All right, come in.
I'll be right in that other room, honey, waiting for you. And I'll be ready.
The kid stepped into Rosarita's room, and she closed the door behind him.
What do you want?
A favor.
I offered you a favor last night. You weren't interested.
Not that kind of favor. I want you and the gal I brought up here to do something for me. Whatever you're thinking, that's not it. I want the two of you to pretend that I'm here for the next couple of hours.
What do you mean, pretend you're here? You are here.
Yeah, but I won't be. If you've got some back stairs and way out of here where nobody will see me leaving.
I heard that you killed Alonzo Cragg and then took his place working for Matthew Harrison.
That's sort of the way it worked out, all right.
I also know that Harrison likes to keep pretty close tabs on his men. You told him you were coming here tonight, but you really want to go somewhere else.
Right again.
Are you double-crossing Harrison?
That's something I'd rather not discuss.
I could sell you out to him, you know.
Maybe you could. He might not believe you.
If you weren't here where you said you'd be, that would be proof, wouldn't it?
I suppose. But you don't have any reason to do that.
Why not? Harrison might pay me for the information, or make me pay less. Either way, it's more money for me.
Right now it is. Over the long run, Harrison's going to suck all the life out of this town like a leech.
You're probably right about that. Just what is it you're planning?
It's better if you don't know that.
Better for who? Me or you?
Everybody. Everybody except Harrison and his men.
You're putting a great deal of trust in me.
If I'm going to ask you to trust me, I have to be prepared to trust you.
That's true.
What about the girl who's waiting for me?
Alisiana. Don't worry about her. She's not very bright, but she's very loyal. She'll do and say whatever I tell her.
Then tell her that I'm sorry I won't be enjoying her company tonight. She needs to stay in that room and maybe make some noise every now and then, as if I'm in there with her.
She can do that. You realize that this is going to cost you, don't you?
Of course.
He took a $20 gold piece from his pocket and handed it to her.
If that's not enough, we can discuss it when I get back.
And if you don't get back?
Well, you and Alisiana have made some money, anyway.
All right. Part of me says you're loco, and even a bigger part says I'm loco for going along with you. But we'll do what you want. Go down to the end of the hall and turn right into the alcove you'll find there. There are some stairs leading down to a door that opens into the alley behind the building. It's dark back there, and if you don't have a light, no one will see you leaving.
That's just what I need. Much obliged.
Don't thank me. You're going off to do something that might get you killed, I think, and I'm helping you to do it. Loco.
You'll tell Alisiana what she's supposed to do?
Go, I'll take care of it.
The kid nodded and went to the door. He opened it enough to see that the hall was deserted before he pulled it wider and slipped out. The stairs were where Rosarita said they were, and they were shrouded so thickly with shadow that the kid had to put a hand on one wall of the stairwell to help guide him as he descended. When he reached the bottom, he found the unlocked door and stole out into the night. Next was the matter of finding a horse. He couldn't get his own mount from the livery stable without alerting the proprietor, and since he already had to trust Rosarita and Alisiana, he didn't want to involve anyone else in the plan. The more people who knew about something, the harder it was to keep it quiet. There were plenty of horses tied at the hitch rails along the street. Since he was already a fugitive, he didn't think stealing a horse would add all that much to his troubles. Besides, he intended to bring it back. The animal's owner might not even miss it. The kid followed the alley for a couple of blocks, then cat-footed along the side of a building until he reached the street. After checking carefully to make sure no one was close by, he stepped out, went to the nearest hitch rail, and picked out one of the horses tied there. He jerked on the reins, swung up into the saddle, and turned the animal. With his hat pulled low to shield his face, he rode unhurriedly out of Gehenna.